Well, the plan was to be more consistent with Pitch Pass episodes starting this week and moving forward. And now things in the MLS's back tournament seem like they're going to go off the rails. We'll try to stay as consistent as possible with episodes between now and the end of the tournament and maybe the resumption of the regular season. But, it's a very fluid situation. We do have an episode this week, though, so hopefully you'll enjoy it.
Houston, Dinah, Portland, Timbers, this morning, Kansas, Los Angeles, Galaxy.
Pitch Pass.
This is our boy.
Toronto, FC, Real Salt Lake.
This is my red, white, and blue.
Chicago Fire.
This is my anthem to you.
Columbus Crew, FC, Dallas,
York Red Bulls.
Pitch Pass, your all-access credential to the people that matter in MLS. Here's your host, Greg Roach.
Welcome to Pitch Pass. Now, I will tell you, we recorded this episode of Pitch Pass, I don't know, Wednesday or Thursday, and a lot's changed as far as what's going on in Orlando since we recorded it. Luckily, the thrust of our conversation was not about the MLS's back tournament, thankfully, because, we are going to talk a little MLS's back. We'll also talk about youth soccer during a coronavirus or COVID-19 pandemic, and in general, youth soccer. And we do it with former MLS USL goalkeeper, now a goalkeeper. Well, I'll let him tell you what he's up to now. Andrew Dykstra joins us now on Pitch Pass. Well, Andrew, I guess the first question is, it sounds like you just opened up something. So what are you drinking? Are we doing something refreshing or something refreshing and delicious right now?
Well, it couldn't be me on here without a beer, so I'm having something refreshing. Summer beer. This is called Siren's Lure from Fairwinds Brewing Company.
Fairwinds.
Saison. I needed something after this morning, just something refreshing to kind of take me through the afternoon with.
This is going to be the Andrew and Roach show over the course of multiple podcasts because Andrew, a big beer guy, as I am, and I have a beer podcast called Head Retention, and you'll be making an appearance sometime in the future on that podcast as well. So Roach and Andrew, just doing our thing over multiple platforms.
Hey, whatever it takes.
So, look. I think the thrust of what I want to talk to you about today is going to be youth soccer related, okay. And especially during this unprecedented time in the world. But I'm going to save that because I want to get some of your kind of outsider looking in impressions of what's going on in MLS and in the bubble and in DC United, knowing, of course, that's not your main focus these days. Your main focus is the youth soccer. But as somebody who has played and also, I assume, a soccer fan who has an opinion, I would like to get that opinion. But before we get into all of that, why don't you catch everybody or anybody listening up to speed on what you've been up to in the year plus since you retired from professional soccer?
Yeah, so for those locally that remember me, I was with DC United from 2012 to 2016. I did my back and Achilles, and at that point, they didn't renew my contract. So that opened up a door for Sporting Kansas. Zooped in, picked me up after a year, traded me to Colorado. And then at the end of that season, it was just kind of a little bit older. Had never really been a continuous starter. I think, we had twins in 2016 and a daughter in 2018. So now I had three kids.
Yep.
And just wasn't getting what we were looking for, from the agent, heading into my preseason. So I said, writing's on the wall and I got a family to take care of. And, it wasn't too hard a pill to swallow, but it's never easy. But made the choice to retire, went out looking for some work, and I was offered a couple jobs just doing like insurance sales and stuff like that. And they always target athletes because they say they have, a competitive drive and they're always recruiting. But had some options for work, looked around, tried to reach out to those that see how big my network was. And then I heard, so my background is in strength and conditioning. Got a CSCS, the certification. That was what I studied. Have a lot of friends in that world, bouncing things off of, did a lot of reading. That was one thing I wanted to do for a long time. I wasn't sure if it would pay the bills. there was two people. It was a small facility in McLean that was private. And there were these guys that work out of I think it was a One Life Fitness, but they have a section of it called Explosive Performance, but they try to target towards athletes and all that. So I had interviews with both, and they're both in Northern Virginia. Came up here, did the interviews. They both offered me a job, and I was thinking, okay, I'm going to do one in the morning, one in the evening, just to kind of see where this goes, and just trying to get my feet underneath me. So I had a call from somebody who said, you know, your old club, my youth club, I grew up with Prince William, is looking for a goalkeeper director. So I was suit and tie from the previous interview, and I just walked in the office and I said, hey, you know, you guys remember me and I heard you're looking. And by the way, I've got this background in strength and conditioning. So they said, all right, well, we'd like to make you the director of sports performance and the director of goalkeeping. And by the way, we now have an academy, which until a couple months ago was in the DA. So we hired me in. So I write up a lot of the workouts, periodization, try to teach the kids a little about fitness and why we do what we do, and trying to prepare for them what they're about to see when they go off to college or any higher level competition. So we're trying to give our youth a heads up, and just training the goalkeepers, which is something I've, you know, obviously after 10 years experience qualified to do. So, I got, you know, it's kind of what I studied and what I like, and, what I'm also experienced in. And that's what I'm doing now in Woodbridge.
With a long-term outlook rather than trying to go contract to contract, which is what you were doing when you were playing.
Yeah, which, you know, and that was another thing I don't miss. You know, in the beginning of my career, we didn't have guaranteed contracts in the MLS. So, you know, you're living year to year and paycheck to paycheck and just scared out of your mind. But especially when you're on 18 grand and living in Chicago.
Yeah.
That's about how we started. you're kind of nervous after a couple months, but it's great because now I'm settled in a little bit. As long as I'm doing my job and showing up, and COVID's been a little hard on us, but we were granted a government loan,
mm-hmm.
So which is carrying us right now, and we've got returning members, so right now it's sustainable for us. I know that there's a lot of youth clubs that are either going under or struggling really hard, or they got to do a lot of layoffs and cuts. And fortunately, we haven't hit that yet, but you know, fingers crossed that we keep rolling.
Well, there's a lot to unpack in your kind of history. So I guess let's keep it as current as we possibly can, and I'll ask you just a couple of questions about MLS and leaving MLS, leaving professional soccer in general.
Right.
Harry Shipp just retired, kind of, I don't want to say in the prime of his career, but he was in the prime of his career, and not a first choice or an automatic first choice, but definitely a guy who gets a lot of minutes. We've seen this a number of times in MLS, more so than I guess we would see in other professional leagues in the United States for sure, and maybe throughout the soccer world. You said, I mean, you're 34 now?
Yeah.
You were 33 when this happened, definitely not washed up, so to speak. What are your thoughts when you read about someone like Harry Shipp or Brandon Vincent a few years ago from Chicago, or your own personal experience about having to kind of hang it up before physically it's over?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, everybody's got different situations. For me, you know, I had a family. A growing family at that time. It's just responsibilities just felt like, you know, head down, and I've got to take care of them.
Is it weighing the short term versus the long term? Because the league minimums are much higher than they were when you first started.
Yeah.
But having said that, you could make 50, 60, 70 a year for a year, or and have to go somewhere, or you could decide this is where my home base is going to be, get a comparable job and know I'm going to have that job for the next 15 years.
Right. No, it's tough, and everybody's is a little different. It has to do with everything from relationships to money to family to, you know, personal preference. And, you know, I know some people that retired before their, you know, the end of their days because they were always kind of being lowballed, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, it was always trying to fight. Like, it's tough when you know you have X amount of minutes, or you have something in your resume that somebody else doesn't have and they go get paid, and you're sitting there going, man, I can't live on this, you know, for that much longer, knowing what else is out there and possible. And, you know, I've seen guys that just get fed up with the system in general. And you know, I think Wayne Rooney hit something on the head that, you know, a lot of American guys talked about in the locker room, and that's American guys are underappreciated. You know, the MLS is always trying to go after, you know, the next big foreign name and pay them a lot of money. And then, you know, American players don't have the ability to go anywhere else. You know, it's not like European Union where you go, all right, well, didn't work in Germany. Well, I'm going to go give it a shot in Switzerland, or go next door to Austria and you know what I mean? Or, mm-hmm. or go down a division. It's just, there's limited opportunity.
Especially for a keeper.
Yeah, exactly. And we just can't go anywhere. And I think that GMs, the MLS in general, they know that fact. And that's kind of the attitude more so when I was younger. That was very much the attitude, was like, without outright saying it, was like, where else are you going to go?
Yeah.
take it or leave it was kind of attitude. And American players there's a lot of good ones. And I think if they were paid a little bit more attention in terms of better contracts and being kept around. And there were moments in my younger career where if anybody gave me an extra, just couple grand, I would have been mm-hmm. delighted, you know? But I was stuck in situations at time where I wasn't getting play time. And I said, all right, well, I'd very much like to leave. And they say, oh no, we like you. I go, oh, so I can get more money. Oh no, we're not going to pay you more.
We don't like you that much.
Like, well, yeah. We're like, fantastic. Well, and then and then you get the vibe at the end of the day of, you know, well, this is what it is, you know, take it or leave it. And it's hard. And I've known a lot of American guys that have been in that situation. But, you know, some get fed up with it, some learn to deal with it and stick it out. But it's, you know, even, I mean, I guess that, like, the minimum now is very, very nice compared to what it was a couple years ago. So, I mean, I guess there's less room to complain now.
That's relatively speaking. There's less room to complain than there was then. Doesn't mean that there's no room to complain or fight for more.
Exactly. And then you look, you know, you got a guy next to you who's approaching the end of his career making several million dollars.
Yes.
And you're like, well, you know, what you have doesn't even hold a candle. And you just gone like, come on. Like, you put in the same work, you put in the minutes. And yeah, I understand the draw, the market and everything like that to get people in the stands and attract fans and all that. I understand. But at the end of the day, the gap is still pretty big.
When you give your answer, I start thinking to myself, wow, this really kind of highlights the importance of the USL and an importance of a kind of an independent from MLS USL, where we can have as many teams. I mean, it's not like we don't have the cities to support 100 more professional franchises throughout the country. Mm-hmm. That are independent of MLS, that can pay a competitive wage, at least with the MLS minimum, that the American player can say, actually, there is 15 other places that I can go along the East Coast or wherever. So you've done time in USL. So is my statement a fair statement? Do you also agree that this is the importance of a lower division that is independent from MLS?
Yes and no. I mean, yeah, you could kind of threaten, like, I'm prepared to go somewhere else. The problem is that the USL is they've got a long ways to go. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't offer their players health insurance. So for me, that was something I was aware of when I started. I think I was playing with the Battery for a year in 2011. I signed with them. This is between Chicago and DC. So I was with the Battery for one season, bounced around, and then I think it was a couple months into the year, and I know that they took care of things. You know, you hurt an ankle, or I had a screw put in my foot, I think, in preseason, and they pay for the surgery and they do all that. But I just kind of casually said to somebody in the staff, and I said, hey, what if tomorrow I found I had cancer or got in a car wreck or something? I said, what's their coverage? And he goes, oh yeah, we don't take care of that. It's just, you know, workers comp on the field stuff. And I went, oh, holy shit.
Exactly.
yeah. So I immediately, thankfully at the time, there was something like it's called grad med. But it was like a part-time insurance and it was actually pretty affordable, but I had that just so that I wouldn't go bankrupt if, God forbid anything happened. But they still don't, I mean, it's 10 years later, they still don't have it. I mean, wow. They've got nothing. And I mean, a lot of those guys, I think the thing that they've got going for them is free housing for a lot of them. And then, I mean, wages are really not that great. So it's kind of, I have always viewed, and I still view the USL as more like it's a stepping stone. It's like if you're trying to get to the MLS, spend a year there if you can afford to do that. Cause you're pro, you know, you're giving that time and the chance for something to open up or something to happen. And if it doesn't, I mean, I've known plenty of guys that they just go, you know, a couple of years and they go to hell with this. Like I can't afford to keep doing it. And it's tough, man. Or, you know, if there's younger kids that they get passed up in the draft, I say to them, I'm like, you're a kid, you know, like, go play. If this is truly what you want to do, go play for a USL club and see if you can get a foot in the door somewhere. See if your coach can help you into a MLS preseason. See if you know, you're on the all 11 team or an all-star, whatever, for the USL. So you'll get some visibility. But in terms of a long-term career, I mean, there's, I know guys that have made it work, but they're the few.
Yeah. And it's a little frustrating to hear because it almost feels like I don't want to say a privileged situation, but it kind of is a privileged situation. You were, you know, at the time, if it's 2011, a young knucklehead with no kids who signed a contract because you didn't really think, didn't matter about health insurance until you started thinking about it. But at the time it was, oh, I'm not thinking about it. And I love your advice to a younger kid, but that's still like, as soon as you said that, I was like, yeah, that could be great. Like if my kid was 19 and wanted to play professionally, we could encourage him to do that. He could stay under our health insurance for a few years and be okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But this is all privilege. Like this isn't like a kid in Europe who just has a million opportunities to succeed no matter their economic level or where they're coming from. This is if you've got this and this, you should really give it a shot. But if one of those things is off, you're really taking a huge risk to try and do this.
No, for sure. Yeah. But like I said, I've known guys that have been career USL guys that went well into their 30s or mid late 30s. And they figured it out. But I mean, I'm just trying to think off the top of my head. I mean, most of them did not have families. Many of them were single or they lived in a house. Sorry, my kid's crying.
That's fine. You've already explained. You've got the twins and another kid. It's fine.
Yeah. So but it's few and far between. And I mean, you've got to be willing to live, like I said, with another guy in free housing, you know, without health care and limited resources. I know. Relax. Chill out. So it's tough. But it's like I said, it you got to know what you're giving up to do those type of things.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, you know, like for my wife and I mean, there was always that looming in the back of my head, like, oh, you know, we could, to me, I'm thinking, okay, yeah, you bounce the USL and come back. But then I'm like, I can't afford to pay out of pocket for health care for a family of five.
Yep.
It's crazy. And that even when I think of it, I want to say there's at one point in my that process where I just said, I was like, that is just, if it ever hits that, like, I just can't do it. You know, there's just no looking back. It's either what I'm doing in the MLS, or it's got to get better, or we're done. Like, you've taken steps in life that you just can't go backwards.
So what is your impression? Because the thing that I kind of, we've read some articles on, especially on The Athletic, is the fact that it's we're still not at that point where MLS is going to USL consistently and saying, oh, let's mine USL for talent and bring them up.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about bringing kids in for tryouts in preseason, but we're not seeing the coming up from the lower divisions as a viable avenue to get to MLS. No. What's it going to take to change that?
In my opinion, the inclusion of more teams has kind of diluted talent. I get, you know, spread the money and they're always trying to improve the top end, but the bottom's not really coming up, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So you've added more MLS teams. And I think, you know, when I was playing, at least the bottom couple players were, I mean, they're not being used by the club and they would be probably good USL players, but they're kind of that in between. But what you probably really want to see is everybody on your roster on an MLS club, at least be game fit and game ready. And I don't even know if that still exists. The bottom couple players just aren't, from what I've seen in my years, they're just not ready to step into games. Then in the USL, the thing is, a couple of years ago, they expanded this whole like first, second, third division, create more teams, and you look at it as more opportunity. Problem is, you've now included just a ton more players that probably don't belong playing professionally.
Mm.
It's just the truth. I'm not trying to be mean, nasty, or offensive to anybody. It's just the truth. You call yourself a pro soccer player, but many of them just don't have that ability to get in a game and be a game changer or really offer much. So now you've just got a diluted talent, you know, by adding all these teams. And then the other part of it is you just don't have the people and the system to develop them. USL clubs can't go out and hire, you know, you know, an Ajax or Dortmund youth coach to come in and change it and teach them. In terms of their development, it is opportunities for development is severely tapered after college. It's just, there's nothing there. Like, usually a USL club has a first team coach and then they'll have maybe two assistants. Often part-time, that they just don't have the experience in player development that they can help those kids along. And even, and until a couple of years ago, it was probably the same in the MLS. Probably the ones that the MLS clubs that just don't have a lot of money. They just don't have that system, that feeder system to develop kids and get them into the first team. It just doesn't exist. Now you got teams like Atlanta that have a lot of money. Now they do a good job. When I was out at Sporting, I know that they have all these different, farm organizations throughout the Midwest with their name attached to it. So they have a way of kind of developing these kids, funneling them in, keep an eye on them all that stuff. But I mean, there's not many. It takes investment from the owner group to get to that. And it's either you have it or you don't. So if you're part of that system, it's great. And if you don't, unfortunately, there's just no avenue for development.
This is a perfect launch point to the second segment, which is your bread and butter, and that is going to be youth soccer. I'll ask you one question about the bubble. It's difficult, and I know I'm not going to put you in a situation where you're going to have to. You can speak for anything going on because, like I said, these are unprecedented times. I'm not going to go, right. Hey, Andrew, have you ever been in a situation where there's been a worldwide pandemic and you've been forced to play? Like, that's not actually going to happen. What I will ask you, though, is to me, and I think the thing that has been touched on but not really harped on is take coronavirus out of it. Right. Maintaining a fitness level and getting your fitness level up to where it should be to play professional soccer at that level in the amount of time that they are turning around feels to me a little bit optimistic. So what I will ask you to comment on as far as the bubble is concerned is how difficult after a layoff of that they had where they ramped up in a preseason, played two matches, and then were on their own for 3 months and then had to re-ramp up. How difficult is that to kind of get to where you need to be to perform at a high level physically?
I'm going to say that a lot of guys who are probably in the league a long time, veterans, that their ceiling is a lot higher for fitness and they understand what a game is mentally. So I think that they have that gauge in their brains of this is what it takes and where I need to be back to. They probably, it's going to be a lot easier for them. And it's just game management. It's knowing what they need to do personally to get to that level. I'd say for a lot of the younger players, it's probably pretty difficult.
Yeah.
Especially if you're in a place where you couldn't get out or you were afraid to get out. I mean, New York City was crazy with the COVID. So if I was one of those players, I wouldn't have left my apartment. How do you get fit? I don't know if you can. I'll be honest. And we struggled with that with our. So we have membership. We have people that pay to play for us. Mm-hmm. We do give scholarship money to the kids that need help. Upwards of like, I want to say, 80-100K a year.
Wow.
So it's nice that we help kids out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when that happened for us. I've got my background. So I wrote up, and I assumed, okay, kids aren't, let's just assume a kid doesn't have equipment. He has to work in his basement. You know, what could he do body strength and pushups that, you know, planks, squats, things like that. And to ways to make it more difficult to just keep the level of fitness up. And then I wrote up a running program, but thing is like some kids and some parents were okay with that. Their kid going out and, you know, getting their runs in. And some of them frankly weren't. So I said, reach out with any problems. I got, you know, 10, 20, 30 kids reaching out going, you know, my dad won't let me leave the house, but I have a Peloton bike, or, you know, mom and dad won't let me go out, you know, during these hours. So what can I do? So it's just about getting creative. Now, to answer your question about, can you get in the game shape? Probably not. Because it soccer is too, you're given these max efforts, right? A jump, a sprint, backwards, forwards, it's all read and react. And it's a combination of every type of movement in every plane at different levels for 90 minutes. You can't really replicate as much as you want to try. You can't really replicate that. You can get your aerobic fitness up. You can do things like repeated sprints and you're going to be in a much, much better spot than you were before, but there's an element to gameplay that you just can't replicate. And I personally think you just comes from the playing part, practicing the games. And it's why they have so many preseason games to get prepared and get guys ready. So that's tough. So the answer is no, but the answer is also you can improve your situation much better than where it would have been had you done less or little or nothing.
Yeah. I feel like we're going to see a lot of strains and a lot of guys coming off injured. I know they get the 5-sub rule, but I don't see how we will get through this without some each team being affected in a significant way by strains and pulls.
It's probably going to look like preseason play, to be fair. You know, there's going to be, it's not going to be, it's just a prediction, but it's probably not going to be amazing soccer to watch, but it's a sporting event that we don't have.
True.
Otherwise we don't have.
True. Earlier in this episode of Pitch Pass, we mentioned my craft beer podcast, Head Retention. Andrew Dykstra will be making an appearance on that in a future episode. If you are a craft beer lover, and a lot of fans of U.S. soccer, MLS, USL, even youth leagues, are craft beer fans. So it's a perfect little cross-pollination. If you are a fan of craft brewing, make sure you check out Head Retention. The latest episode is all about Highwire Brewing, which is a brewery in Asheville, North Carolina. And during the pandemic, they made the decision to expand their operations and now are distributing into Virginia. It was a leap of faith, as a lot of other businesses and companies were shutting down or holding. They decided to go another way, and it actually has worked out for them. Hear why, as we also talk about the great beers of Highwire. Subscribe to Head Retention wherever you subscribe to this podcast, be it the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. So let's get into what's going on with Andrew Dykstra currently, and that is, as he explained, he works with a club. And I'll preface the conversation, or I'll start the conversation by saying that Andrew's club is not a part of the DC United Pathway to Pro system. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, we've had kids that DC has scouted before,
mm-hmm.
And they've gone through us onto the DC Academy, and then what's his name? Yao plays with DC United. I think he came through us for 1 year. He's just one example, but I mean, we're not necessarily a feeder to them, but if there's kids that they scout and are interested in, then we happily pass them on.
All right, let me ask you a question for parents. Mm-hmm. And I'm a parent of two sons who play youth soccer. They're both younger. They're 12 mm-hmm. and they're 10. But I think this is kind of goes into a societal thing as far as kids missing school, missing their senior year of high school, missing their senior year of college. From a youth soccer or youth sports kind of aspect, but specifically youth soccer, can you think of an age group that this period, this pandemic and this shutdown will impact kids more? Is it younger kids who are losing out on development time as they're starting to form their soccer brain? Or is it kids that are 16, 17 that are just on the cusp of being recruited? Or is it kids maybe a little bit older? Or is it just all kids? Or is it no kids? Is this something that kids are just going to bounce back and be resilient kids over?
For me, younger kids got time to develop. They've got years ahead of them. I usually try to tell parents to just, you know, take it easy and put the brakes on when they get a little too frustrated and worried about what they're losing out on. I think that they'll have time. I'm more concerned about the kids that are right now, you know, going into their senior year, trying to get recruited, you know, to play NCAA. That's tough, because if this keeps going and NCAA keeps, you know, delaying these dead periods and stuff, I don't know how that's going to work yet. I'm sure people have ideas. I haven't been in any of those discussions, but I mean, how are you supposed to look at a kid and recruit them when college programs could potentially be cut because of COVID? A good friend of mine, her husband was the college coach at Cincinnati, and COVID hit, and I don't know, I'm sure there's something else to it, but they cut the men's program. So he was just out of a job before he ever coached his first season.
Jeez.
And you're like, I can't imagine he's going to be the last case of that happening. Mm-hmm. You know, programs could be cut. If you can't see kids, you're relying totally on youth coaches' opinions. So you better trust those opinions. But then, like, what if they don't have an NCAA season? You know, like, how are they? You know, these kids that have been working to put time in to try and get recruited to college, on, you know, especially for scholarship money and trying to rely on that. That's tough. I'm mostly concerned for them, but I don't know. Hopefully, we kick this stuff before it's, you know, too late and kind of hurts a generation or at least a class that would stink.
You know, and I was tap dancing around that because I don't want to be an extremist or speak in hyperbole, but that's what I'm really like. Like, in 5 years, are we going to be looking at a year, 18 months worth of kids who are just off, not behind, or just off developmentally because of what happened over the 18 months in 2020 through 2021.
Right. No, it's maybe. I'm still firm that younger kids are going to, they got time. And the ones that are smart enough to pick it up, they'll pick it up. Like I said, I'm more worried in the short term about, you know, kids that are about to try and go to college or trying to sign. That's a tough one. But we've, you know, like for us, we tried to do everything we could for our membership. Like I said, I wrote up strength and, you know, aerobic workouts for them to do at home to try and stay fit. We did something called Technofootball where they go into an app and they do all the little, you know, their trainings.
Mm-hmm.
We held team meetings for our academy to just because the kids didn't have anything else to do. We gave them everything. And some of the coaches were probably like, maybe we did too much, but you know, we're trying to, you know, we had time. We knew that some of the kids had time.
Yep.
Most of the kids had time, to go into meetings and we'd watch a video and try and learn something. So even if they weren't on the field doing it, they were learning concepts, that they're going to see when they get on the field or, you know, just trying to expand their minds a little bit, to something new and something they haven't seen, while still getting their touches in their driveway and running where, you know, when that was allowed, by our governor or yeah. by their parents.
So of the three, ball work, fitness, tactical, if you were running across kids who were like, hey, my parents have only given me this much time and we are in the middle of a pandemic, what should I be focusing on right now? What do you think of those three would be the one that go, you know what, it's important to stay sharp with this?
Yeah, I'd say the touches, and then followed up by, so some of our, more of our like kind of lower end travel teams and all that stuff. Yeah, I mean, if they had time to pop in and learn something in a team meeting, that's awesome. It was a more of a requirement for our academy teams. It's kind of how we presented it. It was like, hey, you committed, and I mean, they pay a decent amount of money. I think that they were always looking for something to come back, which we definitely provided. So we had, I think that they're going to take a lot from that stuff, to be fair. But if you had to pick one of the three, I'd say get the touches on the ball. But it's the watching games. It's that mind part of it that, I think that starts separating kids, you know, developmentally.
One of my hot button issues has been, the United pay-to-play model, which is now one of only two in MLS that exist. Yeah. And then to also have the pay-to-play model while doing away with some of the younger teams that are in the DC United Academy. As someone who was part of an organization that has sent players to DC United but is not a part of their pathway to pro, what are your thoughts on the pay-to-play model as it in regards to MLS? Not you guys. You guys have a model where you need to have money to come in. Right. But for a professional soccer team in the upper league or the upper division of American soccer to not have youth teams at every age group and also to make some, not all, pay feels counter to what my thought of how to grow the game.
They've essentially just become another youth academy.
Yes. With the carrot of, but you can play pro with us.
Yeah. For sure. I hear you. I think the same thing. I mean, you're just another, to us, you're just another academy. Like they've taken some of our better players. They've come and played us and we beat them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you wonder what the advantage is at that point. To the kids now, like Philly Union, who's not far away, they do not have a pay-to-play system. They have an actual school. They're robbing all the kids from the area. I mean, if there's that pathway that they want to go, the kids in this area they're looking at Philly, because they're the ones that have the backing to do it right. I don't know if there's anything that DC can do about it without any money from ownership. I guess they're just doing what they got to do, but I mean, the way I look at it is just they're just the another team next door with a more recognizable name.
Is not having a U-12, U-13, is it NBD? Is it not a big deal? Or is it like, hey, you know what? You're kind of losing out on a year or two to implement your system into these kids. Or does it not matter?
It probably matters to a degree. I'm still kind of rookie to all this stuff. I mean, everything I'm saying is my own real opinion.
Yeah, that's why. But the thing is, you've got the professional experience under your belt,
right,
and now you are also operating within the system,
And here's the thing: is like, you know, throughout my entire career, and now as a coach especially, I'm seeing, you know, they're bringing in. I went to the coaches conference in Baltimore this year. Now they've got people that came over from Dortmund and all these other, you know, big clubs, and they're like, everybody walks away going, if you want to be like them, if that's the goal, and MLS always talks about, you know, we want to be a competitive league in the world by, they said 2022 the last time I heard, and I don't know if it's moved back or whatever, but that was always their spiel to the players. If that's their level, if that's truly what they want to do, then and they're trying to model the top end after some of that stuff, do it right and implement your system. Like you said, the younger players, there's more you can bring in, there's more you can keep. I mean, if you're pay to play, you probably make a few more bucks on that. And maybe that helps the organization. I don't know. But you know, we keep talking about, oh, we need to do it like this, we need to do it like that. Well, that's a place, you know, maybe you know, some things we can't do, like in Europe, just because they're ahead of us and it's a bigger business there. But, you know, the things that you can do, why not attempt to do them?
Yeah, it's a great point.
Attempt to implement them at some, you know, if it helps to any degree, there's a chance of making it better, do it.
You've played this is your boyhood club, correct?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
What's been the biggest difference that you've seen today as a coach or as a director in the club, but also 2020 as opposed to when you were coming up through the club ranks?
Are you talking about where I am now, like who I work for?
Yeah, well, who you work for, but then on a bigger picture, also the youth soccer landscape, specifically in your county.
Okay. Yeah. No, when I was young, it was pretty much so I belonged to Prince William. Now we're they're called the Courage. That's like the whole name. So it's kind of unified the entire club. Now, when I was there, it was pretty much you played under Prince William, but it was like every man for themselves. Whoever coach you had, you just better hope that they knew something. And it was kind of like the Wild West. It was, for us, there were a lot of Jamaicans and Trinidadians that came in, and they'd pick up a club and they'd, you know, this is the way we do it, you know, down south, and this is the proper way, and you guys don't know football. And then everybody's like, oh, I want to be a part of it. And they buy in. Some of them didn't know anything. Some of them did. You know, and then it was, yeah, like I said, it was just the Wild West. So for me, I hit a point when I was older that I went to change with a team in Herndon just because I knew they had a little more visibility. And it was just at the time. It's obviously changed then since, but I tried to go to a different club to get scouted. I did, and then, you know, the rest is history. But now it's a true system. So we hire coaches, and if they don't have proper certification or one that we think they should go get, we pay them to go get it. Now part of COVID allowed us the opportunity to do a lot of coach education.
Yeah.
So we would sit on and we would talk about as a group, well, this is kind of the way we want to play, and these are the things we need to implement with the kids. And it's not super strict. You know, we sat through a Dortmund presentation up at the coaches convention, and they had certain rules for their, you know, this is the style necessarily that you have to, this is our club, this is our style, and this is the way we do it. Now for us, it was a little more like, we understand, you know, U-12 girls is different than U-17 boys. So you just, and you might not have the kids that you need to do the system or whatever. Like, but in terms of how you plan sessions, how you teach the kids, most importantly, I think that we're all on the same page. Now we have, and then I guess as those kids move up or as they move on to different coaches, they're not going to see anything that's like crazy different. They might be introduced to something new, but, you know, we're trying to make it a unified club and a unified family. Now we have the academy on top of that. Now that's like so it's basically Prince William Soccer and VSA, who's out in Haymarket in the same county. They combine to form VDA, which is the academy team.
Yeah.
We share staff, and we try to push the better ones on that can afford to do that. And if they can, we try to help scholarship money. And if at that point, unfortunately, we lose out on some talent, but try to push them on to that team. And that's another level. So when you join that is definitely more strict. It's, we're going to play this way. These are our goals. We try to get into college tournaments and all that stuff. So that in terms of the structure that exists now as compared to then, is like night and day. It's very much different. Before it was, like I said, kids trying to just basically look out for themselves. And
yeah.
It's a structured system, and somewhat of a path to at least get onto college. I think the dream and the goal for us is to try and develop kids that are going to go on and play at the highest level of soccer. That's one of our goals, but, in terms of pathway to get them into Division I, Division II colleges, you know, that's what we're set up for right now. And I think it's a great system.
So I guess my takeaway from that is, back in your day, it was, if you were naturally good, you're rolling the dice. Whereas now there's a system in place to augment your natural skills with
yeah.
real coaching and consistent
for sure.
coaching to get you where you need to go.
Yeah. Yeah. And the, I think most of the coaches that coach at the academy level, I think they're all pretty sure they're all at least have their B license, a couple A's. So, I mean, they're educated.
Yeah.
And they know what they're doing in terms of the teaching, and they've been around and trying to hire the guys that know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But, there's, yeah. Like I said before, you had your natural talent. You're trying to just display it for yourself, and you hope that your coach could teach you something along the way. Whereas now we know what we need to teach. It's mm-hmm. just about, the system in which they do it. And that's not just something here. That's becoming, I mean, this is everywhere now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Richmond's got their academy that, you know, we know a lot of people there, and I personally know through, you know, being loaned out to the Kickers once in a while when I was with DC. So that, I mean, it's impressive to see. I definitely know that there's some places that they design all these systems and they talk a big show, but the coaches don't know squat.
Yeah.
And you feel bad for some of those kids, and you kind of make sure that you wonder what they're getting their money's worth. But, I think that we're trying to do the right things, and so far we've hired the right people.
Last thing before I let you go, Andrew, you did some time in Charlotte. Charlotte will have an MLS team. What are your big picture thoughts on Charlotte as an MLS or as a soccer town and as an MLS town? Do you think that the city is ready to embrace professional soccer at the MLS level?
Yeah. So I don't think so. That was with the Independence. I was down there on loan when I was with Colorado, and I was back and forth a couple of times throughout the year. But I mean, it's different. So the Independence was down in Matthews, which is like 20 minutes south of the city. Now, the new organization is independent of them, from what I understand. But in terms of like Charlotte and being ready for that,
yeah, like the passion of the fans is really where I'm coming from. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. No, there was a handful of fans there. We definitely got a good turnout. I think a big draw for any club is it's like more like a family event, than it is, you know, like an entire stadium full of dancing, drinking folks, but yeah, I think it's ready, and when I moved down to Charlotte, and this was 2 years ago, a year or two ago, whatever, everybody kept telling me, said, this every year, this town gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And the market's getting bigger and bigger. And, I know people down there in the youth game. I mean, there's clubs and they exist. And I think that it's the next spot. I can't see it being flop. But you know, like before, this is a couple of years ago when I heard Atlanta was getting a team. I don't know anything about Atlanta, but I went, well, don't they just like football? I'm like, you're putting them in the South. So, but I was very, very wrong about that.
Yes. Yes.
So, but I would imagine it'd be something that maybe not as good, but in terms of, the way that Atlanta hit it, but it's up to the marketing and advertising teams of the program. But I could see it being a successful place for sure.
I hope I didn't put you on the spot too much. Andrew was very nervous. I don't know if I could talk about this stuff. I was like, I
don't want to say the wrong things.
We're just gonna have a conversation. It's fine. So I hope I didn't put you on the spot too much. And I'm guaranteeing you the next conversation we have, which is going to be beer related, you will know much more than I do. So don't put me on the spot in that podcast. All right.
You got it, man.
Andrew Dykstra, thank you so much, man. I appreciate the time.
No, this is awesome. I really appreciate it. For more.
Show information, go to pitchpass.com.